Okay, so next we have Emily Johnson-Loof, who is an assistant state prosecuting attorney. And Emily has, well, she got her English degree from Rice, and she went to UT for law. She's traveled all over the place. She's graced a lot of counties with her presence as an assistant DA. And she's here today to talk to us about making sense of statutory interpretation. Emily.
So my approach to this topic was trying to, sort of delve into the things that I had questions about for statutory interpretation, a lot of things that didn't make sense to me. So I'm going to start out talking about some of the theory. The court has said that it will observe time-honored canons that esteem textualism. So we've got to know what textualism is and what it is not. And also, since we've been arguing about the proper ways of interpreting statute for more than 100 years, this is great fodder for refuting any kind of argument that your opponent is making. After that, then we're going to sort of delve into that tension between the Code Construction Act and the court's case in Boykin about what you can look at and when. And then how does this actually work in application? So what are the things that require us to have an ambiguity in the statute before we can look at them? When you have multiple canons that seem to be going different directions, how do you sort out in any given case what should trump what? So some fundamentals. Under the Constitution, right, the legislature is supposed to make the laws. The judiciary is supposed to interpret the laws. And so any kind of interpretation should be mindful that it's not venturing over into the lane of the legislature and actually making the law. And whenever there's an interpretation, whether it's interpreting a statute or interpreting art, there's always that tendency that we sort of inject ourselves into the process. So if you're the interpreter looking at the Andy Warhol art saying, you know, what he was really telling us was ChatGPT is going to destroy us all. That's, right, you imposing your own subjective interpretation on what's there instead of looking at the text or the art. There's also an impulse when you're interpreting to say, hey, where something is confusing, I don't know what they were trying to say, let's go back, let's ask the author, let's ask the painter, or in the case of the legislature, let's look at the legislative history, see what they were thinking at the time. The problem with that, though, obviously the individual legislators don't speak for everyone. They can't always anticipate what are the circumstances of how their words are going to be applied. And even if they can anticipate those circumstances, they don't always agree on what the result should be. And so sometimes there's that sort of built-in question because all they could agree on was the language. So in short, legislative history is not the law. So we've got to remember that. So textualism, that's the dominant way of interpreting statutes today. But it hasn't always been that way. So it's only since about the late 1980s, early 90s, that textualism really came on the scene as the dominant theory. Before that, there was sort of an ancestor theory of textualism that was called literal meaning or plain meaning. And this is where the plain meaning rule really came into play, where the statute is clear, it's unambiguous. You don't go and look to outside materials that would contradict that express language. And it's like the parole evidence rule that we had in learning contracts, right? Where the contract language is clear, you don't go and look to outside stuff. A modern judge has called this the wall of ambiguity, and it also applies to absurdity, that you don't go and look to extra textual legislative history in order to contradict what the expressed meaning was. Part of the problem with literalism, though, is that it looked so narrowly at the text and not at other things outside of the text. There was very little extra context, and people found this to be frustrating. Sometimes the legislature would have really gone in a different direction than the common law, but the literal judges were interpreting the language so narrowly that it ended up being back to where the common law was.